You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, in for Veronica Rickert. Wisconsin incarcerates black men and Native American men at the highest rate in the country. Half of all black 30-year-old men in Milwaukee have spent time in prison. With a similar population and demographic to Minnesota, Wisconsin has twice the prison population.
Prison reform advocates argue that these kinds of incarceration levels don't just affect the people behind bars, but also hurt communities throughout the state and cost Wisconsin millions of dollars. The faith-based grassroots organization Wisdom set out in 2012 to reduce the state's prison population by half by the end of 2015. As we near the end of 2015, that number hasn't fallen, but they aren't giving up.
Wisdom is launching a new campaign called Rock Wisconsin, or Restore Our Communities, with a focus on the various ways that mass incarceration affects communities across the state.
Here with us now to talk about that campaign is David Liners, Executive Director of Wisdom. David, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, take us back to the origins of Wisdom. How did the group first become involved in trying to reform corrections here in the state?
We started off actually in Milwaukee with MICA, Milwaukee Inner City Congregations Allied for Hope, actually trying to deal with problems of neighborhood violence. And we soon realized it had a lot to do with drugs. We started working on, you know, things to close down drug houses, and then realized, you know, the problem wasn't the supply, it was the demand. So we started realizing that we, you know, we really needed to deal with, you know, not just locking up the kid on the corner. There would just be a new kid on the corner, and having a criminal justice solution to a public health issue was doing was creating an even larger problem. So it sort of evolved. It evolved from people saying, "What's going on in my neighborhood?" to really realizing, you know, kind of some of the deeper effects, and then also just the effect that it's having on a lot of our communities where so many people are missing, and so many people, when they come back from prison, are having a very hard time making a go of it.
And what role does faith play in the work that you do in this coalition of faith organizations?
Sure. We're of many different faith traditions. We're kind of from all over the board. We're everyone from Buddhists to Lutherans to Jewish congregations to Catholics, you name it. And this really is a matter of values. It's really a matter of what do we think ought to happen to people who perhaps are having a difficult time in our society, people who have a hard time conforming to the way that we want things to go. Is it, you know, are we really just about punishing and pushing people down? Or all of our faith traditions say, no, the role of the community is to uplift. The role of the community is to restore people, restore families, restore people to health. So our members, though we come from a lot of different traditions, are really motivated by those kind of values and really on a deep spiritual level for most of them.
When we think of people who are in prison, we usually tend to think of those people themselves and what life might be like behind bars. As we mentioned at the outset, you're making the case that there's also an absence here. All these people in prison are not at home in their communities. What does that do to those kids growing up there, to the people who are left behind?
It has a tremendous impact on children. It can create, you know, it can create an expectation that this is what we do, this is what happens. There's all kinds of studies, there's all kinds of empirical proof that, you know, when you incarcerate the parent, the chances of their child growing up to be incarcerated are greater. Families are divided. It's really, really expensive to have a loved one in prison. Everything from the cost of phone calls, and usually they're very far away. You know, our prisons tend not to be in the same communities where the imprisoned people come from. There's all kinds of travel involved. It's expensive to buy things in prison. Of course, you're dealing without the income from one of the adults in the family. So there's all kinds of ways that it just has just terribly negative effects on everybody around, on children, on partners, on neighbors.
Talking to David Liners, Executive Director of the group Wisdom, about an effort to reduce mass incarceration here in Wisconsin. And David, we mentioned Wisconsin disproportionate compared to a state like our neighbors in Minnesota, disproportionate number of people incarcerated. How did we get here?
It's been through a lot of little steps. You know, I think the fast answer to it is we got here because we, the citizens, let it happen. We thought we were trading safety for the costs of incarceration. And in fact, it didn't make us any safer. So it's a lot of things. It's a lot of little changes in laws. Truth in sentencing has had a lot to do with it. It was a big change in laws. I think it has to do with defunding a lot of the alternatives that people have, defunding some of the kinds of programs, some of the things for youth that help to keep people out. So it's been a sort of gradual. It took us about 25 years to get there. It's part of a national movement. Some of it is kind of a greatly overdone war on drugs that really just served to incarcerate people rather than to help them be fixed. So it was a lot of small steps. It wasn't one thing. And it's the same thing with the solution. There's not one thing that's going to be the solution. We need to do a lot of things, but we need to first start by just changing the attitudes.
Well, let's get into those solutions now. This new effort is called Restore Our Communities. And I know one focus here is on parole and the way it works in Wisconsin. What are you looking to change?
So there's two things that are kind of parole related. One of the things is we still have 3,000 people in our state prisons who were sentenced back in the last century before truth in sentencing came online, who are people who are eligible for parole. They're still under the old system. Under truth in sentencing, there is no such thing as getting out early on parole. But these people, and they're stuck. They're stuck in an incredibly dysfunctional system. So that's one way. We literally have almost 3,000 people who are not actually getting a chance to earn their freedom, as was envisioned by the judge who sentenced them long, long ago. A lot of these people were teenagers when the crime committed. Now they're in their 40s. And that's one of the areas where people just need a chance to be able to get back to their families, to get back to their life while they still have a life left. The other thing that would be parole-related or supervision-related has to do with people being revoked back to prison because of rule violations. That's something we're really, really concerned about. When a person is released from prison and they're on extended supervision, they can be sent back to prison for any number of pretty minor things. And about half of our prison admissions every year are people who actually are not being readmitted because of being convicted of a new crime. They're being readmitted because they failed something. They may have failed a drug test. They may have missed meetings. They may have left the county without asking permission first. Those kinds of things. There's some really common sense ways that we could have a lot less people in prison and really strive a lot more to help people get better, help people get back into the community more effectively.
Well, you'll, of course, run into concerns from the public about safety, and one objection might be if someone on parole can't follow the rules of their parole, why should we expect that they're going to follow the law? Are they likely to recommit crimes? Maybe we're safer if those parole violators do end up back in prison.
Yeah, a couple of answers to that. One is that there's just simply no proof of that. There's no correlation between people committing any kind of serious crimes. There are other states that don't go over the top the way we do in terms of numbers of revocations. Their crime rates their recidivism rates are no higher than ours. So that it's simply on the face of it, fact-wise, just simply not true. The other thing is there's other kinds of sanctions. We don't have to have the same thing. I mean, there's ways to have sanctions for people who break rules. But the final thing I would say is some of these are rules. There's so many rules, it would be almost impossible for you or me to keep them all. And yet we're expecting people who are under a lot of stress trying to put their lives back together to keep all kinds of rules that most of us wouldn't be able to.
Let's talk about that stress of coming out of prison, readjusting to life outside of prison. That's another part of your effort on a theoretical level, trying to get people, I think the phrase is to treat ex-inmates as humans with humanity, and on a more practical level to help them adjust, find jobs, housing, things like that. Where are you focusing your efforts?
Yeah, so we actually have a group that we're very, very proud of in Wisdom that calls itself EXPO, Ex-Prisoners Organizing, that really are forming their own organization within our organization in collaboration with the rest of us. And, yeah, we need all kinds of ways for people coming home from jail or prison to have a chance to do well. One of the things we need is for people to be able to get a job. We need to remove all kinds of the restrictions that are on people in terms of the kinds of jobs that they can get and the kinds of licenses they can get. We certainly need to get, you know, the ban the box to become a universal thing. Just get it off the front page of job applications. Don't make the first question, have you ever been convicted of a crime? Because that's just signaling that this is the first screen in terms of whether you're going to get a job. So we need people to be able to get jobs. There's all kinds of issues about housing. There's a lot of things. I mean, all the way down to, you know, someday we'd love to be able to kind of work on being able to get people their right back to vote as soon as they get out of prison and not have to wait for years and years while they're on supervision. But the biggest thing we want to change is, frankly, the way people see people who have a conviction history. They are people who perhaps made a mistake at one point in their life. They're not people who are forever to be shunned. They're not people who are forever to be at the back of the line. Folks have a lot to offer our community, and they want to offer it. And we just need to make the paths for it. We need to make it possible for people to go to school, for people to be able to live in decent housing, for people to be able to get jobs, and for people just to simply be able to live as the rest of us live.
We're talking to David Liners, Executive Director of Wisdom, a statewide network of faith-based organizations working for social justice, talking about their new campaign against mass incarceration in the state called ROC, that's Restore Our Communities, Wisconsin.
And we'd like to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Do you support attempts to reduce the state's prison population? Have you, a friend, or family member had experiences with the correction system? How has it affected you or your community? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We're continuing our conversation with David Liners, Executive Director of Wisdom, a statewide network of faith-based organizations, about their new campaign against mass incarceration in the state called Rock Wisconsin.
And we'd like to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Do you support efforts to reduce Wisconsin's prison population? Do you have any personal experiences with the correction system, examples of how it might affect a community? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll go to our callers now. We've got David on the line in La Crosse. David, hi.
Hi. My question is for the guest. Has there been any talk or chance of going back to the old law when they still had parole? I was in prison back then, and I tell you, a lot of guys, they thought twice about acting out in their old ways if they knew they had a parole hearing coming up or they might get out a little sooner.
David, thanks a lot for that call. So David Liners, the idea of parole, pre-truth and sentencing as an incentive for better behavior.
Absolutely. That's something that we need to go back to. Your caller is absolutely right that right now someone in prison has no particular incentive to kind of do things the right way. I mean, most people actually still do, kind of amazingly, but now, though, under truth and sentencing, it doesn't matter. You could win the Nobel Peace Prize. It doesn't win you a day. So, we need to go back to providing people an incentive, a chance to work. I think truth and sentencing, you know, so-called, it's another kind of sign of hopelessness. It's saying there's nothing you can do. There's nothing we can do. We don't really believe in corrections and rehabilitation. And we just believe that's wrong. We believe people can and do change.
David, thanks for that call. We'll go next to Chuck on the line in Green Bay. Chuck, hi. Chuck, are you
Hello?
There? Yeah, you're on the air, Chuck.
Yeah, okay. My son is currently incarcerated. It was drug-related charges. And he had gotten an unbelievable sentence for it. But, you know, it is what it is. You know, we understand that. But they put him in a maximum security prison for, you know, three times, three different prisons. And then, you know, his charges was not violent at all. There was no violence or anything else. And then when he got into this last prison, which is in Oshkosh, they said, you can get out in April, but you have to have a job. And now how is he supposed to get a job if he's incarcerated? Chuck, I don't understand that.
Chuck, thanks for the call. Is this David Liner's often a condition of release, having a job lined up?
For parole-eligible people, yes. Often enough it is, and sometimes it's a matter of housing. They have to have a place to stay, and as Chuck is saying, sometimes, you know, we create nearly impossible situations for people. And also, it just Chuck's point about people being in maximum security who don't belong in maximum security, kind of conditions in prison. We really need to view these as places for people to get better, to get healed, to be restored and returned to the community. And we're just simply not doing that right now as a state. And it's costing us tremendously. It's costing families like Chuck's. It's costing the inmates, but it's costing all of us.
And Chuck mentioned this being a drug crime. I know there have been efforts at diversion saying, okay, instead of a court that sends you to prison, that's their only alternative. Drug courts, addiction courts, alcohol courts, that sort of thing. Is that something you see as part of the solution?
Absolutely. You know, we have a lot of alternative programs in Wisconsin, and they all work, and they work pretty well. And the problem is they're all underfunded. We have a whole lot more capacity. We actually did a study back in 2013 that kind of showed we could actually send 3,000 people less per year to our state prisons and 21,000, I think it was, less to county jails if we maxed out on diversion programs. If everybody who was eligible, that is, nonviolent people who have a mental health or substance abuse issue, were sent into alternative programming, we could cut down our prison population pretty dramatically. And there's a lot of people that just don't belong there in the first place.
Talking to David Liners, executive director of the group Wisdom, about the organization's Rock Wisconsin campaign. That's Restore Our Communities, looking at mass incarceration and maybe solutions to that issue here in Wisconsin. Back to our callers now. We've got Troy on the line in DeForest. Troy, hi.
Hi there. I'm a former correctional officer, and I noticed that the guest was talking about how people are basically getting sent back to prison for breaking their probation, for failing their drug test, or leaving the county without supervision. And I guess I want to hear what his alternatives are, just because in prison, life is it's basically very structured. And when you come out of prison, you need that structure. And I feel like having those rules of probation is something to ease them back into life in normal society.
Troy, I got you. Your line's breaking up there a little. But David, these rules of probation are there for a reason. He's saying they give structure and some boundaries as someone comes out of prison.
And Troy is absolutely right. It's really hard to come out of prison, and it's really hard to kind of suddenly take responsibility for everything in your life when you've had all responsibility taken away from you. You've had a decision-making ability taken away. So, yes, there needs to be structure. But what we don't need is for the sanctions to be over the top. We don't need the sanctions to be huge. You know, one of the things that drug treatment courts use at the front end is they call it graduated sanctions and graduated rewards. It's like little by little. If you break a rule, yeah, there's a penalty, but the penalty isn't you're going back to prison for a year and a half. The penalty might be that you have to come in again tomorrow, and the penalty might be that you have to take extra drug tests, or you have to go to meetings, or you have to do something. There's a lot of other things we can do other than just automatically default to we're just going to lock you back up for an extended period of time and make you lose your job and move you away from your family again.
Troy, thanks for that call. Time for one more brief call. Lou is with us in Appleton. Lou, hi.
Yes. I'm a member of an organization here in the Fox Valley called Circles of Support, which is funded through a Department of Correction grant, and it's coordinated by Goodwill Industries. And we help those recently incarcerated people that are coming out of our prison systems to, you know, we assist them in navigating when they get back into the real world. So my point is, I think as a society, we need more of those types of organizations that help people come out and readjust to life, the real life of living in their communities.
Lou, thanks a lot for that call. As we wrap up, David, are we seeing more efforts like that around the state?
There's a lot of people making a lot of efforts, and Circles of Support are really a terrific thing. Again, it's all way too small. The scale is way, way, way too small. There's a lot of people falling through the cracks there's a lot of people that we're not reaching. So we just really, really need to redouble efforts on to keep people out of prison, to help people who are in prison get transitioned back as quickly and as well as possible, and then to really provide supports for people when they come home.
David, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
We've been talking to David Liners, Executive Director of Wisdom, a statewide network of faith-based organizations working for social justice, looking at their new campaign against mass incarceration here in the state.